The city of Gotham gives rise to villains and darkness. Heroes and defenders of justice will rise up. The villains have chosen their dark path.
Our heroes made the choice of truth over personal happiness, and we have chosen to document it all. We are here to tell their stories. We are Gotham Undercover.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Gotham Undercover, episode 58 for season 3, episode 13 of Gotham. Smile like you mean it. I'm Karen, aka the Scarlet Cougar.
And I'm Jeff, X-Force 11.
Yay. We're back this week to talk about a pretty epic episode. And lots of things happening. Lots and lots of things. I would have given it a higher grade. I'll tell you this right now, and I'm going to explain why I didn't when we get to that point. So I'm teasing you right up front.
Stay tuned.
That's right. We are part of the Golden Spiral Media Network. Find us at goldenspiralmedia.com or the show's Facebook page by searching for Gotham Undercover. So tell us about the episode right off.
Yeah, so this episode was written by one of Gotham's EPs, Bryant Winbrandt, who's done work on CSI New York, Hawaii Five-O, and Alcatraz. And it was directed by Olatunde Osunsame, who's done work on Falling Skies and Sleepy Hollow.
And other episodes of Gotham, I think, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he has.
Excellent. And what is your rating for this episode?
I gave it 9 frightening face-offs.
Excellent. I started with a 9,
mm-hmm.
and then I took it down a half a point because I think this episode could have been completely Joker-centric. I really do. I think they could have done an entire Cult of the Joker episode, and it wouldn't have suffered. It really didn't need other stories. I think they could have fleshed it out completely. Now, I know it wouldn't have done that, but I really feel like we were a little shortchanged. That it wasn't. I would have liked to see a little more.
Well,
of it.
Here's my thoughts. I think they have been teasing us with Jerome's coming back through this season.
Right.
And they are doing this slow build up.
Right.
And I don't mind because I think they are leaving you always wanting more.
Yeah.
And so I did want to see those other storylines that we got because of, you know, last week. But, yeah, I agree.
Could you have seen more? I mean, he was great in this. And I really feel like I could have seen more of him this week. So, to me, an 8.5 is nothing to sneeze at.
No.
and the other storylines were good. I wasn't upset by the other storylines. It's just I feel like, you know what? You could have done a completely Cult of the Joker episode, and I would have been okay with it. You didn't have to go format heavy. You know, you didn't have to pick up 3 storylines on this. It could have been a special episode of Gotham. You know, I would have been okay with it. I think the whole audience would have been okay with it, just all Joker all the time. I'm okay with the fact that they threw the other 2 storylines in. It's fine. They did go heavy on the Joker storyline. So I was happy with it. And of course, there was a storyline that came to fruition that we talked about last week that I was sad that it happened. So there's that too. But again, we'll talk about that in a few minutes. So I gave it 8.5 wackadoos, which is a word that Harvey says in this episode. He talks about Jerome coming back and having a built-in army of, what does he say, 50,000 wackadoos or something like that.
Yes, indeed.
I found it very humorous, so I decided to pick out that word, 8.5 wackadoos. So here's my story titles for this week. The main storyline, that is the Jerome storyline, is Jimmy Jimmy and the Cult Jam, which I like. And this one, I have to explain it. I think it's cute all by itself, but the outcome of Oswald's opus, which is, of course, the fallout from his little rant from last week. Mm-hmm. But, of course, opus is a penguin. So there's that, too. It's a little devil joke. And if you read Berkeley Breathed's comic from the, what, 80s? Was it the 80s?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know who Opus is, so. And then, of course, there's Bill the Cat. So let's go to that storyline, see what I did there. Kitty shows her claws is the last storyline. And wow, did she ever. And how can you blame her?
No.
You really can't. So let's jump right into the Joker, yeah?
Let's do. They started last week with a whole Frankenstein vibe, and they really continued it on this week. But it was fun to see just how many people in the cult of Joker there are. We got to see one of the guards at the warehouse, the Wayne Enterprises warehouse where Jerome was being kept, one of the cops. It was people you don't normally think about get involved, and you're like, okay, I didn't see that side of them. But yeah, so the government cleans up Indian Hill and then ships all the supplies straight back to Wayne Enterprises,
right?
Including cryo tanks.
Right. Now, I'm thinking that that's the doing of the Court of Owls, obviously.
Of course, yeah. And,
you know, Lucius isn't there anymore, so there's no oversight at all. And Lucius does make his comment that he helped develop it, and Harvey's like, way to go, helping the bad guys. Which kind of made me laugh a little bit. Mm-hmm. I was surprised when I saw all the spreading, the how widespread the cult is, and that it was not just the wackadoos, as Harvey put it. Mm-hmm. It was people that were in everyday normal jobs. So are they actually like planting these people?
I don't think so. I think they're finding each other slowly but surely through the course of things. Even last season, we got to see some of the graffiti. And I think we learn in this episode that Dwight has been promising the return of Jerome for a year.
Right.
So.
Okay, and how funny is it that they were like, maybe this graffiti has been around all this time? Yeah, it has. We've been seeing it all this time.
Yeah, exactly. So I think they're drawing people to themselves, and it's attracting those things and Gotham breaking people's sanity and breaking in. We hear from the cop in the precinct there that, you know, he really broke when Jerome and the crew broke in and were basically running rampant over the GCPD there. Mm-hmm. And that's when he stopped being a police officer. So I think it's just attracting them, and they're being activated, so to speak, because Dwight is pumping them up and letting them know that the time has come. So, he's playing that dual role of being the prophet and the speaker, pumping people up, but then he's behind the scenes making it happen. And so he is, I guess he's been biding his time and watching there at Indian Hill and observing. And so he's trying to replicate what he saw there. He's tried it out on some corpses, and now it's time to try it out on Jerome. But he's not having much luck.
No, he's not. Although he did actually do what he said he was going to do. He revived him.
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't kick in right away.
There was a little delay there.
Yeah, a little delay. He was successful, though.
Mm-hmm.
And Dwight is truly a psycho. And
yeah,
for a minute there, I thought the big twist in this episode was going to be that he was going to become the Joker.
Mm.
That he was going to have the face attached to his own face. He was going to become the Joker. And I thought, well, that's genius.
Yeah.
But he didn't have what it took to be the Joker, ultimately. And I thought, no, that wouldn't have made sense. Jerome is the Joker, really. I mean, they couldn't have had a better actor to do that role.
But he's paving the way. He's pumping up the cult of the Joker. They, you know, his assistant says they need to see his face. And so he's like, what can I do? Okay, I'm going to cut off Jerome's face.
Wow. And see, it was at that point I thought, well, maybe he could become the Joker because that is just cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah, and he goes in and he's telling them, basically, we all are Jerome.
Right.
And hyping them up that way, that Jerome is inside them. And it's like, cult!
right. And that's kind of how Joker recruits his little band of merry men, is that he says, you're all a part of me.
Yeah.
We are all one. And, you know, that is his M.O.
Mm-hmm.
And he dresses them all alike and you know, that they're all kind of little mini clones of himself. And in that way, they are nothings. You know, that way they can't think for themselves.
Right.
You know, you're all mini me's. You do what I say because that you're me. And that's kind of his deal. And the fact that Dwight, someone who has no thought for himself, started that, I think that's telling. You know, he's already under the spell of Jerome.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets this thought into his head that we are all Jerome. He's starting the whole cult of the Joker and dropping it in Jerome's lap. So Jerome doesn't have to do hardly any work at all.
Right. You see him kind of grating later on in the episode when he's watching Dwight on TV. He's grating his performance, and he's really not happy with his performance.
No.
He hears from Lee and he sees on screen what Dwight is doing with that group. And he really, you can really tell that he really enjoys that.
Right.
And he's just going to, we can just know that he's going to pick up and run with that.
Of course.
And so that's going to be awesome to kind of see how he does with that. But yeah, so.
Well, I think he's disappointed in Dwight, but the group as a whole, he loves that he's inspired this movement.
Mm-hmm.
And how awesome was it to hear him talking about what happened since he was dead?
He has Lee give him the catch up for the time that he's missed.
Right, he's pacing around and Lee is sitting there talking to him, and Lee, of course, says, well, you know, he killed my husband. And Jerome is like, oh, well, that's interesting. So you guys aren't together anymore because he killed your husband. All right. That's cool. So the last thing I was trying to do was kill Bruce Wayne. So I don't suppose I wasn't successful. Okay. So the next thing I should do is kill Gallivant. And he's dead already. Twice, you say.
Yeah, I love that line. He's dead. Who killed him? Which time? Upstaging, or what does he say? You know, something like upstaging him.
He says, that son of a bitch is always upstaging me. I love it. I loved his whole, and he's literally just pacing around the room asking her questions. And at that point, she's not detained yet. She is, no. I mean, she's being held at gunpoint, but not really like at gunpoint. So yeah. She's pretty casual about it. Mm-hmm. She's just kind of shrugging her shoulders and, you know, she's not answering him with words, but it's mostly gestures and stuff.
Well, and it's the new Lee. I mean, right. It's new because she's still, I think she's still numb.
Yeah.
And we see just her characteristics. And so she's just rolling with the punches.
Right. And until she gets, you know, gagged and handcuffed, that's when she starts showing real fear.
Right.
That she doesn't know what's going to happen. And it's after he says, where's my face? That's when she starts getting fear, you know, true fear.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, the scene before that, obviously, played for laughs, then menace.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we see what Joker's about, is he's playful 1 minute, which is, you know, the happy-go-lucky, oh, I didn't kill him, damn. You know, he's upstaging me, ha, ha, ha. And the next minute, it's gun right in your face, and I'm not so happy anymore. So,
right. It's just amazing. Cameron did such an amazing job. We'll hear about it in the feedback. But the way that he is taking and delivering lines and phrases and even sounds, he is playing homage to the Jokers who have come before him and really building that character, mm-hmm. so that, yes, you could see that, okay, this kind of resembles Ledger, this kind of resembles Nicholson, but you can see that Joker character, and he is forming that character while still paying homage to those other actors. And the way that he does that is just so cool, because he blends those kind of styles together. And I just really appreciate how he did that and the acting that he used to do that. I mean, it was just amazing.
Right. And I think this is part of why they decided, let's just keep this guy. Because I think he's going to make a good Joker. Because I think that was not their goal in the beginning. I think they were just going to establish this sort of movement.
Right.
And then let it go. But now I think they've completely, you know, bought into the whole, this guy is a good Joker. A really good foil for Bruce Wayne, and he's the right age, and I think he's gonna do a good job.
Yeah, and I think they listen to the fans.
Yes.
I mean, I really, and not in a pandering way,
right?
But a way that says, okay, we recognize what you're saying. We recognize that you enjoyed his performance. And we have the ability, and we've built the storyline that we can bring him back in a way that feels credible in the universe and take him to that point, rather than just having a deus ex machina come in and bring him back.
Exactly.
So I appreciate that they did that in a way that felt natural and listened to the audience, but not in a, okay, we've got to do this in order to save face or do whatever. So I like mm-hmm. it.
I like that they made sure to bring back other people from the dead first.
Right.
Instead of just jumping in and bringing him back right away.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. And the fact that they did listen and say, look, we know you like this guy, so yeah, maybe we will bring him back. That was great. And mm-hmm. and really, deservedly so, this guy has really, really good as the Joker. And I think it's not just an homage to the actors. I think he's just taking the whole Joker persona, the comics, the animated version, the just everything. Because the comics, they play a big part as well. I mean, even though they don't have a physical manifestation, there's definitely a tone there that you can pull off the page and play
right
on a screen. And, you know, if you read like The Killing Joke or something like, and I'm not talking about the animated Killing Joke, I mean the book, you know, you can read stuff like that and see into the character's personality. And I don't doubt that he maybe studied some of the comics and got some pointers there. Because he's really, really channeling that character. And he's either crazy in real life or or he's done some really decent amount of homework in the background. And I don't think he's crazy in real life. So I really appreciate his performance. And him coming in, getting his face back at the end.
Wow.
Yeah. And telling Dwight how he feels. Showing the city. I mean, how squeaky were things in this episode around that face?
Oh, we got a kind of glimpse with some pictures.
Yeah, they didn't even come close.
Not do justice because you get the vibe. Okay, the Frankenstein vibe. Okay, you kind of get that vibe. But it's so much different to actually see the regular pictures and then see what's on screen because it's so brutal.
It was visceral.
But so the Joker. I mean, it really made sense for his character, how he addresses the camera, how he knows he's got these followers now. He's setting them up and giving them free rein. He's like, okay, I'm shutting out the lights. Y'all have fun. We'll see you in the morning.
right. And he's also making sure that they understand why Dwight has to go. That even if some of them were loyal to Dwight, he's saying he was just a pretender. I'm grateful to him for what he did, but I'm the real guy in charge. And so, you know, I have to take over right now. So thanks, Dwight.
I've got a question for you. So he plunges the city into darkness.
Right.
And we see Jim up on the roof. He was going to wait for a chopper, but it's too late.
No, way too late. Yeah.
We know next week that we're going to have a Jerome and Bruce confrontation.
Right.
But here's something interesting. This is news, and I'm going to pull it up here because I think it kind of applies. So EpGuides.com has given us some information about the series after we get back from break. And we are going from Mad City to Fallen City.
Right.
And so we have seen this progression through this first half of madness of both the building of the cult of the Joker, but also of Penguin going mad. And now Jerome has plunged the city into darkness. And all I can think is that's just the first domino that's going to take us to Fallen City.
Yep.
Yeah. So
everything's going to run amok right now, I think.
Yeah.
The cult of the Joker, I mean, he said to them, have at it. And I really think that's what he means. Have at it.
Yeah.
The city's yours tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to my Gotham.
Right.
And it is, that is going to be the fallen city. And I think James realizes at that moment they are way out of their depth.
Yeah.
Because there's enough of those Joker followers that the police are not going to be able to handle it all.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with the city being powerless, literally without power, they're not going to be able to handle it. And they can't make sure that everyone stays in their house. I mean, they can tell people to stay in their house.
Right.
But how are they going to do that? You know, no one has power, so no TV announcements, no radio announcements. They're going to have to, you know, troll the streets with bullhorns telling people to stay in their house. And how reminiscent is it of him going on a roof? Were you expecting him to have like a big spotlight? Right? I mean, that's kind of,
the city needs a protector.
Batman.
It needs Batman.
Right.
And he ain't ready yet.
No, he's not. He is not. But I was like, well, is this where it starts? Is this like him thinking, I'm looking at my city from here. Mm-hmm. I feel helpless.
Right.
And then maybe later on, you know, this roof is where I need to have confidence. So
yeah,
let's be a beacon up here.
Right. Exactly.
And right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that scene was really iconic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of him, you know, that's where he is a beacon to the city. And especially when all those lights go out and it's like he cannot do anything up there. Powerless, literally powerless,
mm-hmm,
at that point. And seeing that go up, that explosion go up, it was gutting to me. I mean, I literally felt gutted.
Right.
For Gotham.
You're feeling the same way that Jim is feeling. And
yeah.
And even more so because we know what else is going on.
Right.
And so it's just like, oh my goodness.
Right. Yeah. And we know, well, at least we know that some of the riffraff has been taken out by Babs and Tabs. So there's less of that happening.
Yeah.
Ugh. So let's, why don't we go into that?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Are we done talking about Jerome?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the outcome of Oswald's opus is that Ed and Babs and Tabs, but I think more just Babs and Ed, Tabs is along for the ride, really.
Mm-hmm.
They have come up with this plan now to, Ed is going to have his little plan with Oswald, and in the meantime, Babs is going to use that in order to stake her claim as the rightful Donna of Gotham. She's going to, you know, tell Oswald that because of that interview he gave, all of the organized crime leaders who, mm-hmm, he was King Penguin, they don't have any faith in him, so she needs to call this meeting. And in doing so, she pretty much offs them all.
Yeah, I really liked it.
Yeah.
Because you see her talking to him and really breaking things down. And, you know, I love the line of, you know, her telling him, get up, get ready, do that and disco vampire thing you do with your hair.
That was great, right?
And be at my place at 1:00. And you see him come in, and he has changed from the time that he told her that coming in the door. And he's like, you're just doing this. I'm seeing through your ruse. And you're like, oh, is he?
Right.
And then she turns around
and the smile.
She gets a call.
Right.
And she, yeah, they're ahead of him already. They've got, you know, Tommy Bones, Tabs has got the gun to him, and giving Penguin an incentive there to give up the mayorship so he can get Ed back.
Right.
And just this whole dominoes. And so I really appreciate they're wiping. They have the remaining heads kind of come in because they're scared of what Penguin's going to do. And they just they take option B and just right. kill them all off.
I love how she calls Ed and she says, okay, Ed, Oswald's yours. And then she says, yep, option B. Because Ed, of course, realizes that Tavis is going to want to kill, kill, kill.
Right.
Which is what she does, you know, just the rat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat-a, and they're all out. So what do we have? We don't have any other mob heads except for Falcone mm-hmm. now, right? Babs and a very broken Oswald. Mm-hmm. And through the whole episode, he is still just wanting that grounding force of Ed, who now he is relying on. Little does he know that Ed is his downfall. And boy, we'll talk about the titles of the episodes that are coming up because there's some really telling titles coming up.
Yes, indeedy.
Yeah. Babs is brilliant. And I have to say, what they did with her from the first season till now, wow, I have done a complete 180 on
her.
Oh,
yeah. It's that crazy deviousness, and she's just gained that traction there of taking that craziness and using it as a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
The smartness there, she's you know, in season one, she was just so dependent on drugs and everything else and on Jim. And she just didn't have a place until she completely broke. And once she broke, I think that gave her really drive and purpose and a tool to move forward.
Right.
Whereas she was dependent on others and you know, she was just going to get let down and she was broken and she's not come back from the madness, but learned to harness it and use it as a tool. So
she lives in it.
Right. And that's what makes it dangerous because you don't know what she's going to do. You don't know what the next step is. Is she going to be that cunning and conniving Barbara, or is she going to be Stabby Babs? And we just don't know. And that's what makes her dangerous.
Exactly.
And, it's going to be dangerous for Ed. Because I think he still is underestimating her.
Well, he thinks they're working together.
Well,
and they kind of are. But as he outlives his usefulness.
Well, he feels like he is using her.
Yes.
And she feels like she is using him.
Right.
So it's both ways. But they're going to... They're going to surprise each other because he doesn't realize who she fully is, and that's going to be dangerous to him, and that's going to have to make him become who he needs to become. So, yeah,
yes,
it's just going to be fun to see.
And I have to kind of give her the edge on this because she is full on crazy.
Right.
And he cannot outthink that.
Mm-mm.
He can't. She is too unpredictable for him.
Right.
So there's no way of maneuvering that. There really isn't. He can outmaneuver Oswald at this point.
Yeah, because he knows him. He's ingrained. He's studied him.
Mm-hmm.
He knows his faults. But with Barbara, She's just an unknown. Yeah, right. She has some trigger points, but she just has so many unknowns that she's got the edge.
He might be too overconfident when it comes to her too. He really underestimates her. Like really. Right. He thinks she's dumb and she's not.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to – that's going to be an interesting fight. And we know that Penguin comes out of this alive.
Yeah.
And probably stronger for it. So there's that. But, you know, Ed also does too.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to see that as well. You know, that they both kind of come out on top, I'm guessing. It just – there's going
to be a hard road to get there.
Yeah. There's going to be a ringer. In the middle, and I mean ringer, like you know, ringing out clothes.
Yeah,
yeah. They're gonna go through a lot of mess to get somewhere. It's gonna be difficult. So there's that. Okay, and then the third story. Again, I'm sorry, I predicted this. I really am, but Mom was not all that she seemed to be. She was in on the plan the whole time. She came back. She wanted money.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't really care about her kid.
Mm-mm.
I'm so sad about this. I really am. Because that dinner last week was just delightful.
Yeah, it was. And but, man, just the character development of Selena's character and... it's just amazing just to see that growth. Mm-hmm. And you got to think, this is she's playing a 16-year-old. And she is not happy at the beginning with them giving Cole the money. He's come and he's asked for the money, or he says he's going to send incriminating evidence to the police so that Maria will get locked up, and she's not happy because she says he's just going to keep coming back. And then we see her.
We don't negotiate with terrorists.
Exactly. And then we see her trailing her mom, and her mom comes in and meets with Cole, and they're kind of going over things. And Selena comes in and Mom is thinking it's just about the money. And just to see Selena say, you know, Bruce doesn't care about the money. I don't care about the money. I care that the only reason that you came back in my life 11 years later was because you could make a buck. And just to see her, she's got the knife to Cole's throat, and
that was a great move, right?
I came this close to having that as the podcast image, but the lighting was just a little too dark. But I just loved it because she's there, and then she just, you know, she pulls back because she's just writing them off. She's writing Mom off. She tells,
yeah, you guys are already dead to me.
Don't come back. And then she's reeling, and she goes to Bruce. And I love it because she comes in and she's sparring for a fight.
And she wants that fight
big
time.
And he is just – I give him credit. He's just blocking the blows. He's not retaliating. Mm-hmm. And once again, the maturity of Bruce, of how far he's come, he's like – he tells her, yeah, I lied, but I was trying to give you some happiness basically.
And can you not see his point of view?
Oh, I do too. And I think
100%.
I think even though she's unhappy and she tells him that she's not happy with him, I think she has a level of respect for him now that she didn't have because she knows that he has walked out a lot to give her some happiness. You know, she's realized that he's the one that went and, you know, pulled her mom back. he's the one, you know, for me, he's the one that paid this money to give me this happiness, even though he knew it was a scam. So for actors this young to pull off those emotions and the delivery of the lines, they just did a wonderful job. And once again, I talked about it last week. I said, no, I don't want this to happen. But the writers did it in a way that made sense for the context of this story. And I'm not unhappy with the way they did it. Yeah, I'm unhappy with the outcome, but they did it in a well-done way. And resting that much on those two actors' shoulders after having three, you know, 2.5 seasons basically of seeing them grow just shows a lot of, you know, just maturity on their half. And so I really, while this was a small storyline, I really appreciated it that it was here and kind of gave that growth and momentum to that storyline.
Yeah. And I have to say also that having to be in scenes with Sean Pertwee and Ivana Milicevic, wow. they were just riveting this week. Riveting. And then to hold their own in a scene with each other. I was not watching teenagers this week. Those are full-fledged actors.
Yeah.
They could go on and do a movie like now. Those are like Jennifer Lawrence quality performances.
Right.
And that's a compliment, if you guys don't know. Like winner's bone quality acting. Also, I have to say, I was going to try and come up with, instead of Kitty Shows or Claws, I was going to try and come up with a title that had Helpless in it, because that is her whole theme through this episode, is how helpless she feels. Mm-hmm. Everyone is taking her decisions away from her. She has no decision, none. She doesn't get to negotiate anything. She doesn't get to give the money. She doesn't get to talk to her mother about it. She doesn't get to tell Bruce anything. Bruce takes that decision out of her hands. She feels used by her mother. I mean, just the whole thing is her feeling helpless. And I think that's where everything stems from, that feeling, that frustration in, I have been used by everyone in this episode. Everyone. Not, you know, my mother, this jerk of a boyfriend. I say jerk, but I mean other words. Bruce jerked me around. Alfred was in on it. You know Alfred was in on it because he knows everything that Bruce knows. And, you know, money means nothing to him. She knows that. She said it several times in this episode. Money means nothing to him. So that isn't even a point of contention for her. It's that he did it knowing that her mother was in on it, that, you know, I wanted you and your mother to get to know each other. Well, why didn't you say something? Well, because I wanted to do it for you. Okay, but why didn't you talk to me about it? You know, that's the feeling she has, is why was it all taken out of my hands? And I think logically she can think about it and think, I get where you're coming from, but
she's
from
get
that
beyond
emotional
the heart.
Right. From the emotional part, she doesn't want that taken out of her hands. She wants control of all the situations. And she doesn't understand relationships where sometimes you do something for the greater good for someone.
Because she's never had that example. Bruce has.
Exactly.
And she has never seen and been around two people that love each other, sacrifice for each other. Her mom did not sacrifice for her. She left. She could have sacrificed and kept her with her. She's had nobody and nobody, no examples that have been positive in that way. And yeah, it's just heartbreaking because you see that character of you just want to – she's going to do what she's done in the past. Okay, all I can depend on is me. And that's going to come back to a head full force. And yeah, Bruce is going to have to call her out for that. And it's how long is that going to take for her to move back to close to where she was before this? I just don't know.
Right. And I have to say, in this episode, we got now not full-fledged, but we got the proto-Joker, the proto-Oswald, you know, Penguin, the proto-Batman, the proto-Catwoman. I mean, all of these characters are at least three quarters of the way fleshed out and acting in character for their characters. I mean, Catwoman and Batman, that was a Catwoman and Batman scene. They were fighting with each other, and she wanted him to take it out on her because she blames herself for everything. Her mother used her. Well, it's her fault. There was something wrong with her that made her mother abandon her. And that's her whole thing is she puts everything on herself. And she would never admit it, of course. Never. But that's how she internalizes it is, you know, I steal because I'm bad. So everything is like that for her. And she cannot accept the fact that Bruce actually does like her for herself, that Bruce is doing something for her.
Right.
And we also see that mirror in this episode of the relationship between her and her mother being so horrible. And then even though it's just for a minute or two, we see that bonding, the very clear bonding between Alfred and Bruce, where Alfred is just standing so resolute next to Bruce when they hand the money over. And it is, you know, Selina and her mother are facing off against each other, whereas Bruce and Alfred stand next to each other, just straight and tall, and we're right next to each other. And it's directing at its best when you see that. It's a face-off on one hand, and it's standing straight next to each other on the other hand. It's just so great. You know, even it just puts it right in your head that these are two completely different relationships. and then, you know, you see Bruce and Selina together in that room, and it is just a hot mess. And that's what it's like for them. It's a fight. It's just a constant fight for them, a constant struggle. Even when Bruce loves her and doesn't want to fight back, it's a constant struggle. And he doesn't want to fight back. He doesn't. He can't. He cannot fight back with her. But she forces that dissonance between the two of them, and that, you know, that just continues for a long time. And you know, Bruce has the patience of a saint. He really does with her. So yeah, there's. It just really was so in character through the whole episode. And of course we get, you know, the proto commissioner as well in this episode with him out on the roof. And that's also, you know, putting it in our head. Look, there he is out on the roof. I really saw that in the scene with him, you know, this might have to be a beacon later, you know. I don't know if you did, but I certainly did.
Yeah, I really appreciated this episode. It still, especially those scenes with her, Selina, sending her mom away, it still leaves me questioning the, okay, how are we going to find out about Selina's dad and who he is? So, you know, we'll see. But like I said, I really...
Okay, Charles told me in the comic book, her father is Falcone.
Okay. Interesting.
Right. I didn't remember that until he said it, and then I'm like, right. He had to remind me. So, we can find out. There are ways. She might go to him or get in trouble or something. Yeah. Mom, Maria. So now that she's established, there might be an issue. So she's actually way more intertwined in Gotham than it seems.
Wow. Well, I mean, like I said, this episode just really knocked it out of the park, writing and acting wise. It was one of those ones that you appreciate the buildup that has led into this, and you're just ready to see more. But just the beats that they hit and just the overall quality, it was just so good.
Right. And I have to say, I love Supergirl. I do. But they could take a lesson from Gotham on tightening up their scripts.
I agree. I like Supergirl for different reasons, the likeness and things like that. But I do appreciate the tightness of writing, and I find that that's got to be a challenge for a lighter show. Of how do we keep things light and tight?
It just feels like sometimes they're just throwing everything into the script and going, yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, that sounds good.
But I think part of it, too, is with Gotham, you have a group of solid writers, and they're writing for Gotham. A lot's riding on it because it's not like the CW where you have multiple shows that are sharing writers and also
right.
shows that are carrying your network.
Right. And they can carry each other
right.
as well.
Gotham yeah. has to stand up because they are paying DC for the use of these characters.
Yeah.
And so when
Big
they're
time.
Used, they have to be used well. And
right.
it's such a... For being able to use characters that are also in movies, which doesn't get used a whole lot, you know, that's a no-no usually. So I think they're having to be more concerted about that. And plus, you've got Fox dollars too. But yeah, I agree. I like Supergirl, but yeah, I would like them to see them tighten some things up too. So
yeah. I love how they, I don't have to come up with a C story, a D story, an E story, an F story. There's only three stories here. Yeah. And that's how it should be. It should be two main stories and then an offshoot.
Right.
That's how a plot should go. And even sometimes just one story or two is how it should go. But sometimes I feel like Supergirl is just all over the place. And I still love that show. Don't get me wrong. I love that show, but man, Gotham is tighter than a drum, and I really appreciate that. The writing is on point.
Yeah.
They are outstanding. So, shall we go on to feedback?
Yes, let's do.
Here we go. We have some previous week feedback, and I'll take Chris's.
Okay.
He says, hi, Karen and Jeff.
Hey, Chris.
Hi, Chris. It's been a long time, but I finally settled back into a schedule where I'm able to watch Gotham and I'm all caught up again. I know Jeff saw my praise for Benedict Samuel this past weekend. This was the scene where James was interrogating Jervis. Since I can't watch a particular episode until after your podcast on the episode is released, I'll pop up from time to time with things that I really enjoyed in certain episodes. We're good with that. You and I can remember an episode. Since we dissect them all, I pretty much remember them, right?
Indeed.
Yeah. This from what is now not the most recent episode, but the second most recent. Love Ed's green suit. All he's missing is a bowler hat and question marks. Yep. That was, I think we made that remark too, that it was really reminiscent. Really enjoyed Penguin in this one. Robin Lord Taylor seemed to be channeling Don Knotts with his scared mannerisms, and he did a very admirable job with it. Yeah. Yeah. He's channeling a lot of different elements mm-hmm. in his Penguin, but it's definitely very Penguin-y.
Yeah.
And the walk is still there, oh, too, yeah. which I love. Okay, back. Don't know if it was intentional or not, but I saw a little nod to Star Wars when Selena kissed Bruce as she was about to walk the tightrope with Bruce holding the rope. It reminded me of Leia giving Luke a kiss as they were about to swing across the bridge on the Death Star. I didn't think of that at the time, but it is a little
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
When I look back on it, it was a very, you know, like a, yeah, kind of a reassuring, let's do this sort of thing. Finally, the ending. When I saw the grinning face of Jerome, to use a wrestling term, I marked out, cheered wildly. Good thing no one else was at home at the time, or my wife would think I'm even more nuts than she does already. Smiley face. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah.
You're welcome, yeah, Chris.
That was great.
And thank you for the
yeah,
feedback.
Good to hear your feedback. Whenever you can get it in, we appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. We'll do the previous week or previous month or whenever. We don't care when. We'll talk yeah. about it. And we can remember back to other episodes. Oh, yeah. No problem. And we have two audio feedbacks from Flash Martin, and I have spliced them together, so I shall play it now.
Hey, guys. This is Martin the Flash here. Good to be back. Thought I'd just send you in a quick message. I am an episode behind. I just caught last week's episode tonight, so I'm still 1 week behind, but I wanted to send something in. I thought, and I was so impressed with the casting of Selena's mom. I mean, decent performance and everything, but holy cow, does she not look like her actual mom? It looks like, here I am thinking the young actress playing Selena is a dead ringer for a young Michelle Pfeiffer, and now they go and cast her mom, who also looks like Michelle Pfeiffer. It could possibly be her sister. And I didn't catch the actress's name. I wonder if there is a relation, but my God, the eyes and the eyebrows, the facial shape and everything, it's unbelievable, uncanny. They look like they are mother and daughter. That's crazy. The other note I wanted to make just quick was that Gotham always surprises me with how violent it actually gets.
Yeah.
I mean, the Penguin taking his new assistant out with that golf trophy,
right?
It just seems like that, how brutal this show can be in their violent sequences that they show. It's crazy. It always shocks me. Anyway, that's it, guys. Just wanted to call in real quick. I will catch up and try to catch up to you guys. Talk to you later. Hey there, Gothamites. Martin the Flash here. After listening to the podcast, I had some other thoughts, and again, it still relates to last week's episode. I have not watched this week's yet. Trying to do a little catch-up here, but I've been working some evening shifts at my second job, so I'm a little behind. Anyway, the one point that was brought up by someone was Jim not mentioning the knife that was in his hand when he shot him and it fell over the edge. Why, when you see Lee yelling at you and she's so upset, why would you not argue that point? That he had a knife. He was going to stab you from behind,
right? Like,
why wouldn't he bring that up? Why wouldn't we see that? Why wouldn't they include that? Just him having some kind of defense instead of just letting her hate him. I don't know. Anyway, I have to bring up Jerome as the Joker. He absolutely has to be the Joker. I'm seriously giving him credit as the best potential Joker we have ever seen. And I say that because he's kind of a mix between traditional Joker and Heath Ledger Joker. Actually, you could even say Heath Ledger Joker and Mark Hamill's mm-hmm. cartoon version of him. He seems to be teetering between the two, and I think that potentially could make him probably the best Joker we've ever mm-hmm. had. I love Zaz as well. He's just hilarious. Cracks me up. another point. You guys were talking about happiness and, you know, with Selena's mom, and you're kind of arguing over the point of whether her mom is a good guy or is she going to hurt Selena. And I just want to remind you guys, this is Gotham. There is no happiness in Gotham. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to give a 90% vote that Selena's mom is conning her to get Bruce to pay up.
Mm-hmm.
That's my guess. Something else I just wanted to say, that I think Gotham is so good at intertwining all the characters and story arcs, and their histories. That's the real strength of the show, is taking this massive Batman mythos and writing it from the beginning. It's a challenge they're succeeding at, because we've never really seen the beginnings of Batman and these characters, so it's cool. Anyway, Flash is out.
Yeah. Thank you, Flash. Great comments. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he also guessed. Not that it was difficult to guess that she was going to double cross him, but still.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't want it to be true.
No, me neither. But, you know, it, like I said, we said it. They did a good job at it, so we'll let them go with it.
Yeah. Oh, well. So, on to the current episode feedback. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, so why don't you take Phoenix's? Because I have promised Justina that I would read her feedback.
All righty. Aloha, Phoenix, with some thoughts on the fantastic Smile Like You Mean It episode of Gotham. Overall, I gave it 8.5 out of 10 twitching fingers. Mm-hmm. It could have been a strong 8.9, but about two thirds of the episode, I realized how much I really didn't care about the B plot concerning Oswald and Enigma. So just like Karen,
see, just like me,
intertwined in the story. I mean, how can any rogue gallery villain match up to the Joker? That said, Babs and Tabs did provide some solid scenes.
Yeah, same as me. I mean, it was a good storyline. Mm-hmm. Just more Joker, please.
He's got 10 favorite moments. When Dwight thinks his Frankenstein setup failed and goes for the face-off instead. So gross.
Yes.
Jerome's finger twitch in the morgue.
Okay, let me say something here. That was kind of scary.
Yeah.
When his finger twitched, I went, just a little bit. Okay. Next
Jerome's up. Jerome's bandaged face shout out to the Nicholson Joker. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
The GCPD shoots first, ask questions later, entrance into the TV studio. Yeah, they're just, you know, okay, we're going in. We didn't cover this next point. But he says Lee's testosterone party crashing moment when she proves sodium pentothal does the job better. Yeah, she just goes in and just jabs that crooked cop with the stuff and says, thank you.
Right. Well, why didn't they call her in already? Right. Instead, they were going to, like, beat the guy.
Play. Yeah, I mean, I love the cop. The cop's like, you know, good cop, bad cop doesn't work with cops. The least thing you could have done is switched roles. And I'm like, right on.
Of course. He knows all the tricks. So she's going to come in with – and sodium pentothal doesn't work exactly like that. But, hey, it's Gotham, right?
Hand wavy.
Right. They have Gotham – flavored sodium pentothal. Okay, back to his list.
When someone in TV or movie says it's their lucky day, normally you know that they're gonna die, but it was refreshing shock to discover this time around the guard was actually Cult of Joker's inside man. Yeah, they were playing cards there. Selina calling out Bruce on knowing her mom was swindling her. Bruce plays noble, but she is pissed at Bruce and says, as was at her mom. Yeah, being mad at both there. Dwight.
I don't think she's quite as pissed. Bruce, but pretty. She's at least going to stay around Bruce. Yeah. Her mother's dead to her at this point. Okay. Sorry about
Dwight
that.
Dwight getting shut down on the phone by Gordon for being a phony. Yeah, he's just stating the Jerome's lines back to him. It's like, okay.
Right. And I like that when he says, well, you've done one thing that Jerome never did. You're boring me. And then he shuts the phone.
Oh, love it. Love it.
That was great.
Jerome, Gallivant came back to life too. He's always upstaging me.
Yeah, that was great.
And Joker staples his face back on hardcore.
Yeah, right?
And then he gives this extra, he says, plot device, explain nothing moment. When Jerome dabs Dwight and takes off in a van full of explosives, which he later uses to blow up Dwight and the power plant. But we really have no setup and no clue to where the explosive came from. So,
right.
I'm assuming and hand-waving that this was a GCPD one that they had that they were going to use to maybe blow their way into the studio. But
there you go.
But, yeah. I mean, yeah, come on.
Well, they had a bunch of explosives. We saw that they put all those hand grenades around the woman and, you know, they just have stuff like that on hand to do their whatever, their capers. So, yeah, I mean, I can hand wave that. They're wackadoos, again. They're going to have explosives around. And I like when he says, when Dwight thinks his Frankenstein setup failed and goes for a face-off instead, so gross. I was going to mention this when we were talking, and I totally forgot about it. I noticed throughout the episode, and again, I mentioned I wear earbuds when I watch it on my computer, and there's a good reason I mentioned this, because the sound effects when the face is being moved around on Dwight's face are disgusting. It goes
props to the sound designers, but
yeah, it was, and again I use this term, squicky. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was just the grossest, and again it's that atmospheric, that I mean, no detail left undone.
Exactly.
In this episode, and of course when he stapled his face back on, I was like, did you take my stapler from Office Space? I was like, okay, yeah. He took a stapler, all right. Great feedback, mm-hmm. Phoenix. Very great. And then I promised Justina I would read her feedback. She didn't have time to record it, but she gave us another Riddler. So, riddle mm-hmm. thing. Riddle me this and riddle me that. I didn't get to watch Gotham. Can you believe that? I bet there was madness and mayhem and such. Maybe even a little violence in this city. It doesn't take much. So I thought I would give this a shot, send in some feedback without knowing the plot. I just wanted to fly by and say hi, for I am your eye in the sky, your green butterfly.
Aww.
Yeah, sweet, yeah, right? Yeah,
definitely.
And she put a smiley face at the end. So I hope I did it justice, Justina. And thank you, Justina. We love your feedback. Mm-hmm. Puts a smile on my face. And not a face. Just a smile.
Exactly.
My real smile. Really. Not someone else's. And we have some Facebook feedback.
Yeah, so we have some Facebook feedback. Chris said, I see Jerome as channeling every Joker that came before him. Thankfully, not Leto. But because I see Ledger, but I see a whole lot of Hamill too.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like The Flash was saying. Yeah. And that's not always a bad thing. Okay.
Yeah.
I still believe he's talking about Hamill's is the best interpretation of the Joker there is, and we agree there.
Mm. Yeah. Well, Ledger's pretty good.
Yeah. The issue I have is it's so good that I think it really cost him his life. I mean, he really. Yeah.
He poured himself into it a little too much.
Method acting way too far, and that's right. that's why it's just challenging to watch. But yeah, I agree. So yeah,
he was a good mm-hmm. Joker. But I have to say, Mark Hamill really took his career to a different level after Star Wars by doing the voice acting. Mm-hmm. First of all, he went on The Flash and became, and I'm not talking about The Flash that is now, the 1990s Flash. And he was
the trickster.
And that kind of set him up to do the voice of the trickster and the mm-hmm. Joker in the animated series. And he did mm-hmm. both, obviously. And then, you know, he came back and he did the actual trickster on the new Flash. But doing the Joker in all the animated, I think he's done the Joker in almost all mm-hmm. of them. Almost all of them. Not all, because there was one company that did some movies that didn't use the same right. voice actors. But he's played the Joker in almost all of them and just has gotten it down completely, 100%. And can step out of that box. You know, I've seen him voice mm-hmm. it and he acts it yeah. out. I mean, he is the Joker. When you see him, he is the Joker. And then in this last episode where he played the trickster in mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. Earth 3, he was the Joker.
Yeah, basically they made him that world's Joker. I mean, in the mannerisms right. and the yeah, you're like, all right.
Yeah, he's the yeah. Joker. And I think Mark Hamill is really so versatile and has really grown into being this amazing actor. I mean, he was great in Star Wars, but he wasn't my favorite part of Star Wars. You know, a lot of people really liked him, but from the beginning, I was a Han Solo person. And now, honestly, I mean, I love Harrison Ford, but I think I'd have to say that Mark Hamill is the better actor at this mm-hmm. point. Harrison Ford kind of phones it in.
Yeah, at this point, I think he had a time where he was just a whole lot better in his acting.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I agree. I think that shows the character. You know, talking about, we've been talking about acting is, okay, you get put in a box, and how do you get out of that box? And mm-hmm. I think it takes a quality actor to take, okay, I've been put in this box, so I'm going to step out of it, and I'm not going to do it in a way that you would expect. And so Hamill mm-hmm. has done that with being the Joker, the voice of the Joker. So, yeah.
Right. And when Harrison Ford got typecast, he just got frustrated and decided, you know, I just will kind of withdraw from society and be grumpy. And that was his deal. And he just started phoning stuff in. And I love Harrison Ford again. I think he's cool and everything. But, you know, he's not trying, you know. And I think it's probably his best move that he got killed off in this last, you know, spoiler alert, in the last movie. Because it leaves his legacy intact as mm-hmm. Han Solo. So, yeah. Okay. And Karina from Facebook says, says, I love Jerome and Cameron is freaking amazing. I think he's doing an amazing job and I can't wait to see what's next. And I'm kind of getting tired of all this fight between Jim and Lee. I hope it ends soon. I don't think it's going to end anytime soon. I think there's still going to be some friction there between the two of them for quite mm-hmm. some time. I don't think they're going to make up. So, yeah, I love Jerome, too. I think that's the consensus. I don't think anyone doesn't like Jerome. Is there anyone who watches this show that says, oh, I'm so sick of that guy?
No,
the Joker?
There's people that said, I stopped watching because he's not on there.
Right. And now that he's back, it's nice to know that that I'm not the only one who was like, more Joker, please. That's cool. So how can they get in their feedback?
So our feedback deadline is Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern. You can call 304-837-2278. You can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. There you can type out a message, you can attach an audio file, or you can use a SpeakPipe widget to record your voice. You can find us on Twitter at GothamGSM. And you can subscribe to our podcast by going to goldenspiralmedia.com/iTunes. Our podcast there is there, and all the great GSM podcasts are there.
That is right. And by the way, I see that you're getting lots of likes and stuff on your tweets, on your live tweets.
Yeah, and I think we have the actress that plays Olga, maid, is liking some of those. And so, yeah, it's fun. It's fun interacting with folks on Monday night. So, yeah.
That's very cool. And I like that the cop that interacts with us is not the bad cop.
I like that too. I like that he's sticking around. He is a good cop.
Yeah, he helped to take down that guy this week. It was nice to see that. So next week with Jerome, guest star Cameron Moynihan on the loose with one target in mind. Bruce and Alfred's safety is compromised. Meanwhile, Gordon's uncle Frank, guest star James Remar, pays him a visit, and Nygma and Penguin are forced to confront their issues face-to-face with possible deadly consequences in the all-new Mad City, The Gentle Art of Making Enemies, winter finale episode of Gotham, airing Monday, January 30th at 8 p.m. on Fox. Now, his uncle Frank, that's going to be the guy in the chair, right?
We'll see. We'll see. I'm wondering if it's still the guy in the chair. It could be still Jim's dad and Uncle Frank's bringing some information. I just don't know, but we'll see. But they finally posted the photos the day after on Tuesday, and I was like, okay, they're holding back the photos because – Jerome plays such a big part, and they don't want those photos out there until this week's episode. And those images have not a shot of Jerome in them.
Right.
And I'm like, and you held these back for
why?
Yeah. But anyway, but they're up in the Facebook group, so you can take a look at the photos that are in there.
Right. Yeah, they weren't very spoilery. Yeah. I don't know why they are so stingy on their releases, but they are always stingy.
Well,
with
I mean,
them.
We came back and they had the first two episodes for January, but not the third.
Right.
But then, I don't know. But anyway, but they're back. But
yeah,
so
weird.
Share some news with us about what the episodes are going to be after the break.
I will do. And then I'll let you do our special announcement. Okay, so the news is thanks to episodeguides.com. And is there a link to that in our blog post?
I believe I posted this in the blog post too.
Okay, cool. We know when Gotham returns, and we have a new title for the arc of episodes, which are called Fallen City. The episode titles known so far are episode 15 is Fallen City, How the Riddler Got His Name. Episode 15 is Fallen City, How the Penguin Lost His Power. Episode 20, skipping ahead a couple, Fallen City, Out of the Frying Pan into the Fire. That's interesting. Episode 21 is Fallen City, From the Ashes. So directly after Into the Fire is From the Ashes. And then Fallen City, episode 22, is that the last episode of the season? A Fish Out of the Sea. Now, really, fish is going to close the season out? Right? Can we not do that? And why isn't it a fish out of water?
I don't know. But the interesting thing, I think, looking at those titles, and that does take us into June with how they fall. But the interesting thing is those episodes that are missing.
17, 18, and 19.
Right. And I'm thinking they're not putting those out there because something about, the next episode, it would give info in on that. So that's what I'm thinking is they're not going to put those out there till after next week's episode. But it's going to be interesting.
Now, we don't have a Joker-centric title as far as I can tell. We don't have a Bruce-centric title. We don't have a Catwoman-centric title. Barbara?
Mm-mm.
I mean, I'm not expecting to get one of all of these. I'm just saying we don't have right. these. Is the frying pan into the fire and from the ashes are those Firefly?
I don't know. And it could be talking about a relationship that, you know, yeah, you know the could. Relationships get worse and then something new springs up out of those. I don't know. We'll just right. have to see.
Mm-hmm. Right. And nothing that signifies the Court of Owls in those.
So that, you know, we'll see. Maybe that middle run is owl-centric, but we'll see.
Let's hope so. Because I want more of the Court of Owls. And they said they were going to tie the Court of Owls into all three
yeah.
arcs.
Yeah.
So the fact that Gordon's Uncle Frank comes yeah. in next week gives me yeah. high hope that we're going to see Court of Owls next
I
week.
I hope so.
So that would be good. Okay, now for the exciting thing, and I'm going to play this later. Over and over again. And then here we go. Here's what's coming up, you guys. Here's our special announcement.
Our special announcement is we're not going to leave you batty during the break with no
That's
episodes.
Right.
So Gotham will be off the air in February, March, and most of April. But Gotham Undercover is not going to leave you Gothamless. So Phoenix suggested this, and we thought it was a great idea. So during the break, you're going to get to participate in three Gotham Undercover Extra episodes. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at three Batman films related to Batman and Batman films and discuss how they tie into Gotham. We'll discuss the characters and how they're like and different from Gotham, the TV show. And we want your feedback. We need you to join in this. And so it's going to be a group effort. So we're going to have Karen and myself and John, a.k.a. The Substitute, will be joining us for a round table. And what we're going to ask you to do is watch the movies along with us and then send in your feedback, audio or written, to be a part of the discussion. And so here's how it's going to work. The first Gotham Extra is going to be looking at Batman Returns, since it deals with Penguin and Catwoman, and it deals with the Burton era. And the feedback deadline for that is February 16th at 6 p.m.
Yeah, plenty
right.
of time to
plenty
watch.
Plenty of time. And then we're going to take a little more time off. And then the next Gotham Extra is The Dark Knight from the Nolan era, and the feedback deadline is March 2nd on that one at 6 p.m. And then we're going to give you a little more time to watch, think, and leave feedback. And then the final Gotham Extra is Flashpoint Paradox, and to discuss the animated movies. And that one is March 16th at 6 p.m. So we kind of did multiple eras and styles and different
yeah.
characters to kind of
see, and they're going Flashpoint.
Yeah.
Why Flashpoint? Well, because Thomas Wayne and Bruce Wayne play a pretty big role mm-hmm. in this, and Thomas himself is a whole different kettle of fish from Bruce, and we wanted to kind of discuss that sort of like alternate timeline thing and how an alternate timeline affects the whole Gotham mythos.
Yeah.
Since Gotham itself is kind of a Elseworlds
right.
sort of thing, Flashpoint itself is also the same sort of, you know, Elseworlds mm-hmm. story. And it, even though it's a Flash story, he plays a big
right,
part
right.
in that. And that's why we chose Flashpoint Paradox mm-hmm. to discuss that. I mean, we could have chosen the Killing mm-hmm. Joke, which was another suggestion, but that is so dark. I just thought maybe Flashpoint Paradox
yeah.
would be better.
So yeah, we've got the three episodes there spread out over the break. And then, you know, we really want y'all to kind of join in and leave your feedback and enjoy this with us. And, you know, it's fun because John is the new co-host of Triple Cast. And so we're doing our Gotham spin on Triple Cast.
That's right. Gotham Cast.
Yeah, there we go.
Yep. And I'm going to say it one more time, just in case you didn't have a pen ready. You can rewind this. You can pause it right here. Go get a pen. Gotham Extra number one is Batman Returns. Feedback deadline, February 16th at 6 p.m. Gotham Extra 2 is The Dark Knight. Feedback deadline, March 2nd at 6 p.m. And Gotham Extra 3 is Flashpoint Paradox, March 16th at 6 p.m.
That's right.
So watch them. Get your feedback in. Same way you get your feedback mm-hmm. in normally. And join in the conversation. And we'll put your feedback right in as we discuss mm-hmm. the movies. And we'll have this nice little round table. These episodes might actually be longer than normal. Yeah. So be ready for that, because there's going to be three of us, and we're going to be discussing a two-hour-long movie for the mm-hmm. most part, and we'll be including everyone's feedback. So, yeah, there's that. No summaries, just, you know, how you think it ties into mm-hmm. Gotham, what parallels you want to make, your thoughts on how that movie impacted your watching of Gotham, or your thoughts about Batman as a whole, you know, things like that. That's what we want
exactly.
to hear from you. So we're excited mm-hmm. about it. We love that Phoenix came up with the idea. So thank you mm-hmm. so much for that. And we're excited about doing it. I haven't really had a chance to do anything with John except for the Christmas episode of Triple Cast. So it'll be nice to actually like sit down and do a whole discussion. I was just kind of the information
guru. You were the moderator.
That I didn't. Right, sort of. So it'll be nice to have a real discussion yeah. with John. And I think they'll really be good mm-hmm. times.
Definitely.
So I cannot wait for that. So I'm so happy that we finally get to announce
yeah,
that.
Yeah, fun stuff.
Get that going. But we still have one more episode mm-hmm. left, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Until before the finale, the winter finale, whatever they're calling it. And hopefully that'll be great because we have more
That's right.
coming up and some other stuff. So we'll talk to you later.